welcome to another episode of the Forecast F1 podcast, and you're joining me together with Sam. Sam, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you. Another race weekend in the books, and we get that much closer to the summer holidays.
Yeah, we're pretty much in it right now. I wanted to see if actually we could agree for a third time in a row on the driver of the day, because previously we have agreed last time on Hamilton, the race before on Hülkenberg. Now I want to hear from you. Who's your driver of the day for the Hungarian Grand Prix?
You know what? I would go with Bortoleto. I think he had a great drive. We talked a little bit about this last weekend, actually, just the fact that we've seen Sauber and the performance, and especially from Gabriel, like recently, the last two races, he's done very well in qualifying, and this, he just excelled once again in the race. So definitely my driver of the day, but I'm curious to know yours.
Yeah, no, that does make it three times in a row. I fully agree. And I don't think that there's anything to argue with. So that's quite nice, because we don't always agree on that. But promises some, I think there's enough talking points for today. So let's get in it. Let's first talk a little bit about some of the forecast stats. So we had 1,461 people playing the game. A few more people joined compared to last race. Of course, last race was Belgium sprint weekend. We had an early deadline. This time people had up until FP3 to make their predictions. And we're going to see how that played out also for the two of us. But let's first have a look at our forecast podium. Actually, before we do, let me ask you the following. How many people do you think correctly predicted in this order Norris, Piastri, Russell for the podium?
Ooh, I'm not going to, I believe probably not a lot, but what is that technically considered? So let's go with 63.
All right, it's three times fewer that amount. Sorry, that doesn't make too much sense the way I say it, but yeah, it's only 22 people that got that podium right in that order. And the average score this weekend was 42.1 points, and that, comparing for example to the Belgian Grand Prix, where of course the average was much higher, but we had a sprint and a race. If we just look at the race, the average score there was 50. If we go further back to Silverstone, the average score was actually 42.3, very close to the average score of this weekend. And going to the podium of forecast, we find on P3 Francesco Tanti from Malta. And that name should ring a bell, because that's actually the first person who ever gets a third time podium for forecast. So he's the first person that gets to the podium for a third time. He was on the Las Vegas 2023 podium. That weekend he won. He was actually a shared winner that weekend. And he was also on the podium again exactly 1 year later for the Las Vegas 2024 race. He was P3 there, and he's P3 again today for the Hungarian Grand Prix.
That's pretty impressive, and I'm sure that he's going to go for a fourth.
Yeah, no, I'm pretty jealous, actually. I would love to make it to the podium at least once, and Francisco is able to do that three times in the past 3 years. So he's the first person that gets to the podium three times, but it'll be interesting to see if ever anybody makes sure also to get three podiums in three consecutive years, because it's been 2023, 2024, and now 2025. So very, very impressive. And on P2, we have from Ireland, Mikael Lowry, and he scored 75.5 points. I missed out by saying that Francisco actually scored 75.3. So he was very close, actually, to getting a P2. But it's Michael who got that P2. And on P1, we have from Italy Stefano Consolo with 86 points. So a full 10.5 points more than P2.
Very nice.
Yeah, that's quite impressive. And I always ask you every race weekend from which countries you think we had the highest amount of players. So I'm going to ask you again for this weekend. I'm going to ask you for the top three.
All right, I'm gonna go with something different. No, I'm just kidding. I'm gonna stick to what I had last week, and that's going to be Kenya, Spain, and Mexico.
See, the interesting thing is that because it's quite consistent, I already know beforehand when it's going to be different from what you're going to guess. And P1 and P2 are correct. Kenya, Spain, 84 and 75 players. But on P3 this weekend, actually the UK, we had 68
really?
Players that played with the Union Jack in front of their name. So
and that's the first time that's happened.
That is indeed the first time, yeah. So that's quite exciting. I don't know if you recall, I asked you last time how many Canadians played. I don't know if you recall how many that was for last race in Belgium.
Well, as we know, my memory is a little shoddy, so that's going to be a stretch to remember that. But
yeah, I do this on purpose.
But let's go with it anyways and guess. Let's say it was around 12.
It was 18 last time, and actually we got two more Canadians playing this weekend, so we got to 20. And actually, interestingly, you guessed for P3, you guessed Mexico, right?
I did.
And Mexico was actually sixth, so they're dropping a little bit. On P4 we had India, P5 we had the Netherlands. So fewer Mexican players than we have usually, or actually perhaps more players from the other countries. Talking about players from other countries, we had for the first time this season a player from Uzbekistan, and we also had for the first time a player from Iceland. I recall that we had a player from Iceland playing in the first season of Forecast, but it's been a while since we had a player from Iceland. And that also brings us to looking at the overall competition. And if we look back after Belgium on P3, we had Sunay Dornola from India. He scores 29.5 points, which means he drops actually quite a bit to P19. So that means we have a new P2, which is Rylan Harris. And actually, Rylan scored not a podium, but he scored 100 points last time in Belgium. He had he scored a P4 there with his 100 points. This weekend he scores 56.6, and that means he's on P3 right now.
That's pretty impressive too for the Belgium score.
Yeah. So I mean 100 points. Imagine that. But so Rylan is on P3 right now. On P2 we had Matt McCasey from New Zealand, but he scores only 32.4, so he drops to P7. Means we have a new P2. And from Italy, back on P2 actually, because after the race in Silverstone, he was also in P2, but then he dropped. And now back on P2, coming from P5, Paolo Rinamo, and he scored 56.9 points. And that means that we have still on P1, Filippo Morelli from Italy. He's been on P1 now for a good while. He scored 52 points, so pretty good score for him this weekend. Means the gap now to P2 is 18.1 points. So there's a bit of a gap, but also not something that's impossible to do in one race or even a few. And of course, we still have, this was race number 14, so there's still 10 to go this season, so more than enough time to overtake him for any of the other players. But an impressive run from Filippo thus far.
Definitely.
And actually, we've been looking for the previous few races also at some of the F4 drivers that we have playing with us. We had actually three F4 drivers that played this weekend that did not play before. Those were Reno Franco from the Netherlands, who drives in F4 Spain, Tamim Hasiba from Qatar, who drives F4 Middle East, and Monty Maassen from Germany, who's in F4 France.
Very nice. We continue to climb.
Yes, and looking at the scores of the F4 drivers, we had on P1 this weekend for their competition, Luca Magnussen, the brother of Kevin Magnussen, who scored 60.5 points, and with that he is the highest point scorer of the junior drivers. And on P2 we have Vivek Kantan from F4 Spain. He's a US driver that drives in F4 Spain. And on P3, somebody that we have had on the podcast previously, Hadi Noami Massi from Canada, 55.6 points. He drives in F4 Central European Zone.
Very cool.
Yes, so that also brings us to our score, Sam. Do you remember what you predicted for the podium this weekend?
I do. I did go with the Norris win, Piastri in second, but third, I chose Hamilton, who clearly did not have a great weekend.
Yes, that's right. Well, Lewis didn't have the best of weekends. I agree with that. But you did in terms of score, because I'm very impressed with your P192. You scored 57 points this weekend.
Woohoo! All right. Does this mean that I get to continue going up the... I'm getting closer and closer to the podium when it comes to the overall rankings?
Well, you are getting closer to the podium. You are actually indeed gaining 26 places this weekend, because you were on P93. Oh, nice. You're now on P67. So, yeah, you're definitely getting closer to the podium, but still, you know, P67. I mean, there's still some work for you to do.
There definitely is.
Even more so for me. I had a podium of Piastri, Norris, Leclerc. So I was quite dissatisfied with Russell still overtaking Leclerc there at the end of the race. But my points were, I scored a P1053. I had 32.4 points, very little. And I actually dropped 52 places. So I was previously on P427. Now I'm back on P479. I'm still in the top 500, but not something I think we should dwell on for very long.
that's fine. We can move along. There's always the next race.
Exactly.
In 30 days, exactly.
Roughly. Yeah, exactly. Only the end of August. Well, there were no new high scores with the scores this weekend, of course. Yeah, with the scores being so high in Belgium. We're setting pretty high standards for the high scores. So let's talk a little bit about the race, and we already agreed on our driver of the day, but let's take it back a little bit to the Saturday and talk a little bit about qualifying. So I guess there's a couple of positives to talk about, and there's a couple of negatives to talk about. I would like to start with the positive points, and I think the most important one, even though perhaps after the Sunday, Leclerc doesn't really want to look back too much on this weekend, but I do think that his performance on the Saturday was not only was it extremely good, it was also very surprising. I don't think, and I think many in the paddock afterwards also, even Leclerc himself said that he did not expect to perform as well as he did. It was interesting because I think the conditions on the track actually for Q3 were not as good as they previously were in the first two sessions of qualifying, because if you look at the final pole time from Leclerc, if you look at Q2, for example, four drivers had actually set better times in Q2 than the final pole time of Leclerc, and even Stroll did, and I think we'll talk about the Aston Martins in a little bit. But actually, it was the closest Q3 spread in F1 history. So there was only 5.5 tenths between pole and P10. And that is the closest in the history of Formula One. So I think that says something about the competitiveness of this year, but also of this specific session. What other than Leclerc, what were, because I think there's a couple of other positives to talk about, Sam.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I would say talking about the Aston Martins, it was definitely a pleasant surprise to see both of them back up into the Q3 session and fighting for, I mean, at one point, like you said, the depth and the times for the drivers in Q3 were very, very close. And Alonso at one point was right up there. So it was nice to see the pace that they were able to extract on this track and you know, further to that, going into the race, obviously they were competitive as well, so that was a pleasant surprise, I would say, for sure, when it came to qualifying. I think other notable mentions would be, of course, McLaren. We were looking at the practice sessions. It was, I was under the assumption that it was going to be a McLaren car that was going to secure pole. So they did do well. But yeah, I mean, how Leclerc was able to just be able to extract what he needed to in that final lap was incredible at the end of the day. And like you said, he was surprised himself that he even managed to secure pole. And interestingly enough, I believe that was the first pole for Ferrari in 14 races this season. So that's another important achievement for them at this point. And we know, you know, they've been struggling as of recently, really, with the car itself and a few other things. But alternatively, if we look in contrast to Leclerc's teammate, Hamilton, he obviously struggled very much in qualifying, and he's had his challenges as of late in that Ferrari car. So he vocalized that, I think, at the end of the, once qualifying was done, he actually, I believe he expressed the fact that they should look at replacing the driver, meaning himself. So clearly it's seems like it's mentally impacting him at this point. And I mean, I can only imagine what it's like behind the scenes to be able to be in a position where you're unable to extract what you can out of the car, and your teammate is able to secure pole. That definitely, as we've seen time and time again, can be definitely impact your confidence, to say the least. So ultimately, though, I think for Ferrari it was a success to have Leclerc on pole. And then the other positives are, yes, the rookies, again, coming through, the Racing Bulls, the fact that both Liam Lawson and Isaac were able to secure P8 and P9, I think was impressive as well. Liam Lawson, we've seen the last few races him doing quite well. So this was just another achievement for him.
Yeah, I'm just looking back at, because you were saying it was 14 races ago that Ferrari had a pole, but that was China. That was the first. Well, that was a sprint pole, right, of Hamilton. So I'm trying to find the last pole for Ferrari, and I think it was in Baku. But that was more than. I'm counting. I think that's like 21 races ago.
Yeah. Either way, it was. We can definitely agree on the fact that it was a long. It's been a considerable.
Exactly.
Period,
we can't even
of time.
Really recall. Yeah. Yeah. No. It's.
They've had, both drivers have vocalized the issues with the car itself when it comes to drivability, so I don't know what's going on there. We all would love to see Ferrari, of course, be a lot more competitive. And it is difficult to see drivers at the caliber that both of them are struggling time in and time out. But on a positive note, I think achieving the pole and being able to, after such a long, considerable period of time for Ferrari, is still something that they can walk away from and be happy about to some degree over this weekend. But we'll get to the race shortly.
Yeah, no, and talking about being happy and being content, we already mentioned Bortoleto as driver of the day, but securing P7 for qualifying, again out qualifying Hülkenberg, and I think with the qualifying of Belgium, he was already head to head one race. I think it was 7-6 in favor of Bortoleto. Now it's 8-6. It's a very impressive performance from the rookie. I mean, it's sometimes even you need to remind yourself that he is a rookie, because he performs as an somebody that has the experience to get the performances that he does. But yeah, you're right. There were also a couple of drivers that and you mentioned there, Ferrari, of course. Hamilton has been mentioned. He didn't have the greatest qualifying day, but also Verstappen putting it on P8, I think, was also quite somewhat disappointing. I think for the whole weekend, the Red Bull didn't seem to be in the right operating window. Tsunoda went out in Q1 already, although interestingly he was actually in that Q1 session only 1.5 tenths away from Verstappen, which has been the closest actually that he has been to Verstappen all season. So in that regard, maybe just a small positive note there for Yuki. Antonelli didn't make it out of Q2 either, starting P15. So yeah, I guess mixed feelings all around the paddock. And well, you already introduced it a little bit. I think the Sunday wouldn't be any different. There were also a lot of mixed feelings there. So yeah, why don't we dive a little bit into the race and talk about I think the main talking point, of course, is going to be the winner of the race, Norris, who won the race with a one-stop strategy. Interestingly, actually, most of the drivers that went for that one-stop got a very good result doing so. The other drivers, notably Alonso, but also Bortoleto, who we just mentioned, and Stroll. I think all three of those were probably extremely content that they were able to retain somewhat or even move up in the case of Bortoleto, because Stroll started ahead of him. So for them to score such big hauls of points, extremely good result. Also for Lawson, who was also on a one stop, but it was interesting to see Norris and Piastri and Leclerc. I mean, I think for a big part of the race, I was expecting Leclerc to be overtaken much earlier than actually he was overtaken by the by both McLarens in the end. But he managed to keep up a fight for pretty big portion of the race, I think for a good while into the race, it really wasn't that clear whether Piastri was still going to overtake Leclerc, but also not if Norris one stop was really going to be something that would work out. So I think all in all, definitely a race that was interesting until the very end, because that three driver battle throughout the whole race, of course, in the end translated into a battle only between the two McLarens, but that battle was interesting until the very end. And I didn't expect the outcome that we got. I thought that Piastri would actually, I don't recall exactly, but I think 14 laps before the end, I told myself, well, if he's if he's taking a half a second out of Norris every lap, he's going to overtake him like 4 or 5 laps before the end of the race. But it turned out to be different. Of course, we know that Hungary is not the easiest track to overtake, but definitely a very strong performance from Norris, because I think, well, in order to do this, you do need to be mentally strong, and that is something that has been discussed regarding Norris as a topic for quite a long while. But he seemed quite resilient today.
Yeah, definitely in fine form. And like you said, I think McLaren as a whole, both drivers had a very good performance. And although the tire strategy was slightly different, Norris with the one stop, Piastri with the two stop, they both, I think Piastri overall finished just 0.6 seconds behind Norris, and you did see him trying to battle him in those last two laps. So it was close. It was definitely close. And I think that altogether, for McLaren to also achieve this weekend a milestone in their 200th team win, to come out on top with the 200th win and celebrate it in the way that they have at their strength, obviously with a dominating number when it comes to the constructors, and also now with their two drivers at the top for the drivers' championship, and the gap itself between Piastri and Norris is down to 9 points. So it's, I mean, overall a fantastic weekend for McLaren to walk away from. Both put on a really good show, and it's going to be exciting as we get into the final stretch of the season itself, especially with how tight the battle is now between the two drivers for the driver championship. I would say, going to Ferrari and Leclerc, you're right. I agree with the fact that he held the lead for a little bit more than we anticipated, but it was really unfortunate to see that promise of a podium just crumble away as we got further into the race, whether it was the tire degradation, the strategic mismanagement. I think that all of these encompass the result, unfortunately, that Ferrari ended up with. And there was definitely the opportunity to be able to secure a podium at least, let alone be able to have a fighting chance for second or even to win the race. But it was an unfortunate fumble, I guess we could say. And Leclerc was not shy in communicating that over the team radio. But I don't think that he was wrong. I think that ultimately decisions were made that cost him and the team their result. I mean, I would say at the same time, if we look at Russell, ultimately Mercedes didn't have much pace this weekend. They actually weren't that competitive. And Russell himself had was quite behind for a considerable period of time. So the fact that he was just in the right position to be able to capitalize on Ferrari's mistakes, overtaking Leclerc towards the very end of the race. And also, I think that their tire strategy really worked to their advantage when it came to this overall, and it ended up securing him the podium. So overall, a fantastic result for Mercedes, probably the best that they could imagine coming off of this weekend. And yeah, this track isn't a track that typically you're going to see a lot of overtakes on. So I would say, even though that is the case, there were also some interesting overtakes that were happening. I mean, Verstappen in the very beginning trying to do what he could. He did have that interesting overtake attempt with Hamilton as well. And we saw some drivers unable to really get far at all. Some Williams, unfortunately, finishing in 14th and 15th. And we also saw Ollie Bearman at the bottom of the grid. And I would say, though, that Kimi managed to make some moves and be able to secure a point, at least finishing in 10th. So that was, I would say, a pretty decent result for him, considering where he qualified.
Yeah, actually also going for the one stop. So definitely happy to see Kimi score at least one single point. That's his first point in the European part of the season, actually. Getting back to a couple of your points, yeah, I agree that, and we should be very happy, actually, that Norris won, because for the championship, as you're saying, it's a difference of 9 points. That difference would have been 23 if Piastri would have won instead, with Norris finishing second. So, yeah, I'm all in favor of keeping the championship alive until the very end. So even though it didn't get me the amount of points that I wanted in forecast, I'm very glad that this happened. Less so for Leclerc not finishing on the podium. You're right. I think, yeah, of course, him voicing his frustration on the radio, I can also only say that I agree. And especially, you know, I taking the wrong decision is one thing that can happen. I mean, many teams take wrong decision during the race. That's understandable, but the way that it came across was as if the one stop was never even considered before the race, and that surprises me a little bit, because I think as an F1 team you should definitely at least take it into account. Now, Pirelli said ahead of the race that the one stop would be 10 seconds slower than a two stop, so that was somewhat confusing, perhaps, if you look at what got the race win. But of course, you cannot, I don't know whether because they're an Italian team, they rely on Pirelli, but I will tell them that they should not, because that happens over and over again, that they get it wrong. And not taking it into consideration is just, that's not really clever. You mentioned Verstappen. Yes, he did have a couple of very good overtakes early on in the race. And then the one on Hamilton, I was actually very surprised that the FIA decided to investigate that after the race, and it appeared that Hamilton didn't even show up to the steward's office after the race. There was a representative of Ferrari, I can see the documents, but Hamilton himself was not there. So I guess that also indicates that Hamilton didn't really make too much of it. Actually, I was also thinking about the fact that whether Verstappen would have gotten a penalty, yes or no, wouldn't really have mattered in the results, because Antonelli was lapped by the race winner, so that means he finishes having driven one lap less than Verstappen. So even with a penalty, that would not have mattered in any way. Verstappen would not have lost that ninth position, but I'm pretty sure he doesn't give too much of a flying whatever, for that ninth position. but I guess maybe some people in the game did, but we're going to look at that a little bit later, actually. We do have, again, Kari Laura lined up for a rematch to play against Samantha in the quiz, so we're going to get to that in a little bit. But just talking about the... some of the other drivers, we saw an investigation for Hülkenberg and for Bortoleto. When at the start of the race, apparently they had moved, but Bortoleto didn't get a penalty for that. Hülkenberg did. Actually, Hülkenberg went for a very alternative strategy compared to all the other drivers, pitting after five laps. He started on a soft tire. And actually, it seemed a pretty good strategy. Without those 5 seconds, he would still not have gotten a points finishing position. But altogether, I think we can conclude that what we've said about Bortoleto, but also about Hülkenberg, I mean, the Sauber just seems very much on point, organizationally, very well structured at this point, which is funny because, you know, 1 year ago, talking about Kick Sauber, most people were, you know, making fun of them for mm-hmm. you know, mistakes they made in their pit stops, mistakes they made in their strategy, and I think at this point they are really they seem to be one of the sharpest teams. So that is something that I don't know to what extent you know, they, of course, they have a couple of people that have proven themselves previously. I mean, they have Jonathan Wheatley there, who I think with things like pit stops is very important there, but also Binotto is there, who people have made fun of previously as well, but I personally think that he's actually probably a very competent person. It's just that, you know, he's probably not the person to front your team in the media, but I do think that technically he is very well versed. So yeah, that team actually seems to be doing very, very good. And you know, at times, you know, for example this weekend, if you compare them to Williams, who we have said previously were the fifth team, although if you look purely at this weekend standalone, you would say that Aston Martin is that fifth team, or even fourth. But yeah, I think Sauber is, you know, they're becoming more and more competitive. I think it's pretty clear that if we have to pick a team that's further at the back, I have less faith in Alpine. And that's a little bit alarming for me, even though actually we didn't mention, but Colapinto actually got into Q2, so I thought that was a pretty decent result. But other than that, yeah, they seem to be a little bit behind on various other aspects. But all in all, I would say it was an interesting Sunday. I liked it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that overall it was a great way to wrap up this part of the season and go on the summer break and look forward to the rest of the season, and where I guess we can say at this point where McLaren's going to end up, who's going to take the driver's championship.
Hi, Sam.
Oh, you're here. Hi, how are you?
Fine, you?
I'm good. I'm looking forward to us playing again. Hopefully you don't kill Anton, though. Or hopefully. Believe I don't me. Know, depending.
She might.
Exactly.
As you're already hearing, we have as a guest Kari Laura to play a rematch against Sam. Actually, on the previous podcast, I said that the two of you played against one another, but we actually investigated that a little bit, and Kari Laura was right. She did not play you previously, Sam. She was playing against Savannah last year for the Brazilian Grand Prix, if I'm not mistaken. I might That's be wrong right. on the Grand Prix, but it was against Savannah.
Yeah.
That is right. Well, I'm glad to have a rematch since... And so early on, just back to back, I'm ready for it.
Yeah, me too.
Well, let's see how ready the two of you really are. So we're going to play a quiz. And for those that not regularly listening, so we're going to pass all the point scoring positions, and we're going to see how many people in the game correctly predicted those positions with those drivers. So we had 1,461 people that played the game. And Sam, you can kick it off. And the first one, of course, is Norris. So how many people out of 1,461 do you think had Norris on P1?
I'm going to go with 375.
I think 655.
All right. Well, Sam, you're already 1-0 behind because it was 611, actually.
Wow.
Oh, my goodness.
So that was, that was
number.
Pretty close. To,
yeah.
Yeah, a lot of people. I was actually expecting more people to go with Piastri, although I guess... I don't even have the numbers here. I don't know how many people went with Piastri. We can look at that later. But I'm going to ask Arilaura, how many people went with Piastri on P2?
I think 500.
Okay, I am going to go with 389.
Well, that means you're 2 points behind now, Sam, because it was... It was actually 616, so both a little bit further away from the right answer, but that's an interesting start, Sam. That means Russell is yours to guess for P3.
All right, Russell, let's go with 112.
I think 200.
All right. Well, actually, it was even fewer than 100. It was 62 people that went with Russell on P3. So that means 1 point for Sam, 2 points for Carilaura. And Carilaura, you're up for Leclerc on P4.
300.
That's a good guess. I'm going to go with 289.
289. It was 404 people. So
wow.
Yeah. So actually, that's quite a lot. But it means it's a point for Carilaura. So it's 3-1. Means we move to the first Aston Martin. We're going to see two Aston Martins in this quiz. But first, Alonso on P5. That one's for you, Sam.
Let's go with 12.
I think 5.
Actually, surprisingly, it's more than that, more than both of that. It was 29 people that went with Alonso on P5.
That's a lot.
Really? Well, I'm sure that number's going to increase next race.
Yeah, I'm still surprised. I always reflect this on how likely I find it that I myself put people in these positions, and I wouldn't have gone for an Alonso on P5. But actually, we even had people predict Alonso winning this race. So
wow.
You know, anything can happen, really.
It sure can.
Talking about anything that can happen, Bortoleto on P6 for you, Carilaura.
5 people.
Let's go with 13.
All right, this one's for Carilaura. It was only 3 people that went with Bortoleto on P6. So I guess already a little bit more confidence in Bortoleto, but still not as much as to put him that high up by many people. That's 4-2 for Carilaura. Means we go to P7, Stroll. Sam, that one's yours, your favorite driver.
I'm going to say nobody.
I think 6 people, maybe.
All right. Well, it might surprise both of you that it's almost the same amount of people that had Alonso on P5 have Stroll on P7. It's just
really?
One less. So we had, we had 29 people for Alonso on P5. We had 28 people for Stroll on P7.
Wow. I'm actually very surprised by that.
Yeah.
So was I. We're going to go to Lawson, who finished on P8. Actually, a very good result for Lawson. We didn't talk about it much. We didn't talk too much about the Racing Bulls. Myself, I had Lawson on P9. But, would like to hear from Carilaura first. How many people put Lawson, they both start with LA, on P8?
12 people.
That's a good guess. I'm going to say 15.
All right. It's more than both of that. It's actually even more than double that. It's 36 people that went with Lawson on P8. Yes.
That, again, another surprising number.
Yeah.
Yeah, that means we are 3-5, if I'm keeping a correct score. And yes, I have been. Verstappen on P9, Sam. How many people put him that low in their predictions?
I want to say I don't think a lot, so I'm going to go with 8.
I think five.
Okay, that's very nice. You're both very, very close. One of you is only one away from the right answer, and that's Kari Laura, because it was six people. So you're only two away from the right answer, Sam, but Kari Laura is still closer. So that means it's three against six. Means the last question is there just for shits and giggles, basically. But I'm still going to ask it. So Kari Laura Antonelli, how many people put him on P10?
90.
Let's go with 42.
Means the last point also goes to Kari Laura because it was 100 people. Yeah, nice. That means
you
that
win this one.
You're one against one.
Yay!
Wow, and the competition thickens. Let's go.
I actually had a pretty decent bonus question, if I can say so myself. Don't need it, but I am gonna ask both of you. So there was three people that had Bortoletto on P6, right? So normally I tell who those people are if there's only so few people. But my bonus question was gonna be, out of those three people, how many of those people were from Brazil?
The three people?
Oh, well, this is easy. You only have three it's one of three, right? So I'm going to say...
Yeah, or none. That's the other option.
Or none. Okay, I'm going to go with none.
Me too.
Okay, first you were going with all three, and now you move to nobody. Okay, well, actually, I will read out the names of those that had Bortoletto on P6, because I think it's a pretty magnificent prediction. It was Christian Aldunate, who is from Bolivia. It was Scott Ford from Ireland. And Jan Chiao from Brazil. So yes, there was one person that was from Brazil that predicted that. But not all three, and also not none.
Okay.
So yeah.
Good thing that wasn't an added point, or we both would have lost, so...
Yes, but you still lost, Sam, so...
Yeah, I still lost, yes. Thank you for reminding me.
Yeah, although I lost to you in the actual forecast game, so I think that matters more. So I think you can laugh even louder. Actually, this weekend, I won against Kari Laura because she scored how many points? 30-something.
30-something.
Yeah, less than
very
I did.
Bad.
Yeah, no, well... We've got some time to think about what we're going to do for the next Grand Prix, because that's going to be only at the very end of August. So we have the summer break, and I guess the teams, the drivers are looking forward to that. We're going to have to figure out what we're going to do without F1. We're going to have to figure out what we're going to predict for the Netherlands. It's not going to be a sprint race. We know it's going to be a sprint race next year, but not this year. So we can, of course, we can dwell a little bit on what we're going to predict. Sam, what are you looking forward to for the Dutch Grand Prix?
I'm looking forward to seeing this competition between the two McLaren drivers and the Drivers' Championship. I'm really looking forward to seeing how that's going to continue to unfold. I'm looking forward to seeing how Aston Martin does. Are they still going to have they just been able to extract something out of the car, and we're going to see Alonso and some tight battles up front? That would be exciting. And I think I'm really looking forward to the continued success of the rookies and Sauber. I really they are a dark horse at this point. They've really kind of shined through, and I think you did a great job explaining or just articulating the management side of it and the strength that they have within that team, like the depth that they have within that team, that's clearly translating into their results. So we still have a lot of racing on the calendar, and I'm looking forward to it. But like you said, Anton, it's more of a question of what are we going to do with our time for the next month.
Well, I'm pretty sure that Kari Laura will be quite happy going into the summer break, actually, now being the highest ranked Dominican in the competition.
Yay!
Because, very nice. Congratulations.
For very long, you were on P2, but you're now, you overtook Roy Ortega, who was on P1 for a very long time. We actually have a prize for the highest scoring Dominican player for the whole season. We're going to actually make a box of cigars with Kellner cigars, so that's exciting. I guess you're the summer champion, but how do you think you're gonna remain on first place for the second half of the season? What are you looking forward for the Dutch Grand Prix, and what are you gonna predict?
No.
You know, this is my favorite part now of the podcast, I gotta say.
Eso no estaba en el contrato. This is not in the contract. he told to me, you only do the quiz, and that's it. And that's it for me.
Okay, but I'm still curious. He loves surprises. What you're going to
predict. No, I don't like it.
Yeah, but...
but he loved it.
But we need to think about a little bit, what we're going to do for the second half of the season. So I'm curious, are you going to put Piastri on P1, Norris on P1?
Yeah, Piastri and Norris.
Yeah, but you cannot put both of them on P1.
No, only Piastri. Only Piastri.
Okay. So actually, we had the same first five positions predicted, Kari Laura and I. So it was a very close one between the two of us. So we're going to continue. We're looking forward to that battle for the rest of the season. And it's going to be a while, but I hope all of you listeners are coming back to the podcast after the summer break, and we see each other then.
We sure will.